Hello, and welcome to a special episode of In Depth. I'm Jason Futch, and I'm happy to have you on as I take you back to another interview that I did last year. It was an interview that I did with Brandon Johnson. He is a medical examiner with the Grundy County Medical Examiner's Office in Illinois. He is one of the leads who is working on the Grundy County Jane Doe case from 1976. It was in October of 1976 when her remains were found by a farmer and his granddaughter on the side of a highway in the county. And in this particular interview, I had an opportunity to talk to James about the case, where it is at that time, and what's going on with the investigation. So we had an opportunity to talk, and there was some interruptions in between. I think he was with his kids or something like that, but nonetheless, it was a good interview. Also, I do want to provide an update on this case. Since we did this interview, the DNA Doe Project has taken on the Grundy County Jane Doe's case. And not only just that, they were able to link this Jane Doe to Alabama. So for those of you who live in the Alabama area, be sure to share the Grundy County episode from season one around. So that way people know a little bit about her case, see if they remember a young woman matching her description going missing around the same time that she was found deceased on the side of an Illinois highway. There's a possibility of that. Anything is possible in the Grundy County Jane Doe case. So with that being said, here is my interview with Brandon Johnson. And just to let everybody know, our show is sponsored by Anchor FM and CrimeWatchers.net. So with that being said, here is the interview. This week for our second episode of In Depth, we are joined by Brandon Johnson, who is the deputy coroner for Grundy County, Illinois. He and his partner, Chief Coroner John Callahan, have been attempting to crack Grundy County's only cold case, the death of an unidentified African-American woman, who was found outside of Seneca, Illinois, in October of 1976. Both individuals have been spearheading latest efforts to identify her, and October 2nd of this year will mark 43 years since the Jane Doe was found. And she still has no name. Perhaps that will change. With that being said, I want to thank you for joining me, Coroner Johnson. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing excellent. Beautiful weather out here.
Same here.
Nice. So tell everyone about yourself and what do you do for the Grundy County Coroner's Office?
Sure. Yep, as you stated, my name's Brandon Johnson. I'm a deputy coroner with the Grundy County Coroner's Office. I'm going into my fifth year. Primarily, my responsibilities are the day-to-day death investigations that come in. However, for the past 2.5 years, I have been the lead investigator in the Jane Seneca Doe case.
Nice. So prior to the Grundy County Jane Doe case, has there been any cases of interest that you have worked on, one that has perhaps may have grabbed your attention the most?
No, this is my first cold case, and since then I've taken on two additional cold cases with a different county. So this kind of started my platform and helped guide me through the process, where I've been able to take these tools and move forward and help some other cases as well.
So what other cold cases are you working on right now?
I am working on an unidentified infant and an unidentified male adult that was discovered in a neighboring county.
Oh, wow. Sounds like you're pretty busy out there.
Yes, for sure.
So let's talk about the Grundy case. So tell us about the Grundy County Jane Doe.
Sure. So our Jane Doe was discovered on October 2nd, 1976. It was a Saturday in the fall. A local farmer, as well as his granddaughter, had come across what they believed to be a deer carcass on the side of the road alongside U.S. Route 6, just east of the LaSalle County line in Seneca in Grundy County. It was a rural area in the 1970s. This county was all Caucasian. We fast forward over the years now. It's diverse, but still primarily Caucasian. So at the time they discovered her, they contacted authorities. Authorities conducted their investigation. At that time, they were unable to identify. They tried what they had at the time, which was fingerprints. It was basically it for testing. Nothing came back on that. They did take a blood sample. It's unknown where that ever went. It appears to have been lost in the shuffle. We're talking, you know, 1976 compared to modern day police work. So that's also presented a challenge. However, they did preserve the sweater that was found wrapped around their head, and we were able to DNA test that. I believe we're going to move forward and pollen test that to also find out what area she potentially came from, courtesy of NCMEC. So at the time, her death was ruled as homicide. The cause of death was a gunshot wound to the head. At that time, about a month later, she was buried unidentified in a cemetery in our county. The county paid for the grave, and that's where she remained until we exhumed her on December 17, 2018.
Mm-hmm. So how are the testings coming along in that situation?
Well, you know, it's been a frustrating process. I thought I was going to have a good match with a female that was missing out of the Chicago area, as you mentioned prior.
Sure.
However, I still have my doubts on whether or not there was maybe an error with the sweater. But now that we have the DNA profile off of the bones, that's our true sample. So that's since been uploaded to CODIS as of maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago now. The last I heard 2 weeks ago, UNT, University of North Texas Center for Human Identification, was working on the profile of the mother from the missing Chicago woman. So that has not been fully compared yet. They're still working on the results, so I have yet to hear back. Hopefully that could be a twist to things as well. So it's, as of today, everything still continues to search in CODIS against everything else. You know, in the meantime, we've been in talks with the DNA Doe Project for the last probably 6 to 8 months. And now that UNT's finished, we're working at coordinating getting those profiles sent over to them. And, you know, we're moving forward. We're going to reach back out to NCMEC again for additional 3D on the skull. It's just a lot of steps to work on when most of our evidence has been with UNT for the last few months.
Wow. Well, it sounds like that this case is definitely moving at a high pace, that's for sure.
Yes. Like I said, I started on it probably the fall of 2017, and at that time the case was ice cold, and it seemed like right around September of 2018 we were really warm, and then when we went ahead and did the exhumation, we now had everything we needed. And we had our Jane Doe in front of us, and we had the bones to send out, and we were able to really move forward quickly.
Wow. And you know, it's crazy because I've heard about this case before, you know, through in passing, if you will, like from web sleuths and crime watchers. In fact, for a little bit, I know Carl Koppelman's reconstruction of the Jane Doe was actually a very popular forensic reconstruction of the Jane Doe until NCMEC came along and did the recent one. Now, how do you feel about this current reconstruction that NCMEC did?
Well, I like the variety. I feel that What we were using before was the postmortem photograph with her, her eyes closed and a bloody face. So Carl Koppelman did some excellent work with what was provided to him, and I was just amazed at what one could come up with a picture of a deceased person that that's eyes are closed. So he was able to, you know, generate that with her eyes open, very lively look. That helped us finally be able to get something out to the public to try and get the attention of others. So over the years, you know, I've received other additional artist rendered images because I like variety. I don't want to just focus on one. NECMEC did a good job as well, but all of these images, I have to stress again, are based off of the post-mortem autopsy identification photo. So when NECMEC develops the 3D that's going to be based off of the actual skull, I think it's going to be pretty neat to see. I've seen the work that they've done with the most recent unidentified John Wayne Gacy victims. And it's just very neat.
Yeah, and you know, it's crazy because I've also been following the Gacy unidentified victims. And I think that NECMEC did a really good job on those reconstructions. However, I think that they should do the reconstruction on the other victims too, because I think that it'll help, and it'll help in going a long way and, you know, attempting to identify these individuals instead of just two, of course.
Right. And I think that's what they're probably working on. I know Jason Moran from the Cook County Sheriff's Office, he's a very knowledgeable investigator, and he's helped me in the past with my case. So I think he's probably working a little bit at a time, and they're probably on a backlog over there with requests for those images to begin with.
It's just amazing how they can make facial reconstructions look like photographs. It's just amazing. But yeah, so here's my question to you. What is your personal theories on this case? Like, where do you think personally she may have been from? What could have led to her unfortunate demise?
You know, there are several scenarios that constantly run through my mind when thinking of this case. You know, at the time back in 76, there was a lot of missing African-American females nationwide, especially out of the Texas area, which for a while, a lot of them that were missing, I had in my mind as a list to exclude or include. So those were all exclusions based on comparison to DNA and dental. So then I knew that wasn't them, but prostitution was definitely popular at that time, drug activity.
Now that we're talking about prostitution, was there any sexual abuse on this victim?
It's noted that there wasn't, but again, we're looking at that timeline, 1976. The forensics really wasn't there. Today, it would be very simple for authorities to determine that in their investigation. Back then, I'm not sure that they were able to.
Now, do you think that because I remember watching in the news just recently that the mayor of Chicago and I believe several other law enforcement agencies had announced that there had been a possible serial killer in that area going back to about 30 years ago up to now. Do you think that if there was a serial killer who was targeting African-American women, do you think that she could have fallen victim to this serial killer?
It's definitely possible. I think that I personally believe she's from somewhere in Illinois, whether or not it's the Chicagoland area or somewhere, you know, northern, like Rockford or close to the Indiana border. I feel that she's from Illinois. It's just trying to reach any friend or family at this point. I can't say, you know, what her story was, but I theorize that she was executed and merely dumped on the side of this road in this rural area because of the easy access to Interstate 80 and just the fields.
So pretty much the DNA is being run. You guys are in talks with the DNA Doe Project, which that actually makes me extremely happy considering their recent successes with the last like 8 cases that they did.
Yes. Yes, definitely. This past year was very successful for them, and I hope that it will be for us as well.
Well, you know, it's crazy because, you know, now, you know, your case came from 1976, whereas their oldest case had just been solved, and I'm sure you saw about it, where this Jane Doe from right here in Oregon actually had been identified after being a Jane Doe for, gosh, I think like 46 years. She was found in 1971.
Yes.
Yeah. And
I think there's definitely a lot of hope now with all of the advances in technology. All of the other resources that are available in genealogy has played a big role in all of this. We're more destined to find a family member now than, you know, just hoping that somebody's going to submit their DNA to law enforcement.
Certainly. And so with that being said, I mean, it seems like we've pretty much covered the case for the most part. And, you know, I'm actually pretty excited that you guys are going forward with modern technology, and probably more than likely it'll be on your side, especially considering the fact that, you know, for the most part, the DNA Doe Project has had a high success rate. So with that said, I got to say, I'm actually pretty confident in you guys. In fact, I'm pretty positive you guys can probably have her identified. Let's cross our fingers by the end of the year.
That's definitely been on my list for this past year. I want to make it happen. My boss, the coroner Callahan, also wants to make it happen, as well as my chief deputy. So we've all been invested in this for, you know, years now, and we want that closure. So until that happens, you know, the case does remain open and active. I encourage anybody that has any information that could possibly identify her to reach out to me. Once again, Brandon Johnson, deputy coroner, at 815-941-3359, or by email at that's going to be bjohnson@grundyco.org. also, it should be noted that Jane does still remain with us at our office since her exhumation, pending further testing. So what we're doing at this point is, obviously, we're going to exhaust all resources possible and hope that there's going to be a match some way, shape, or form, where someone's going to come forward and identify her. If not, and she isn't identified, we are going to rebury her. However, we will be reburying her in a new casket, as well as a vault, and we do have plans as far as a headstone, at least so something's there in her memory.
That's just incredible, very incredible. And we, you know, with that said, anything else you want to discuss, or anything you need to plug or mention?
I would also like to remind everyone that since at this point this is being investigated as an unidentified deceased person, you can remain anonymous. This is not criminal. We're looking to give this female the name in which she deserves. So if you feel like you need to anonymously get in touch with me, I encourage you to do so. Someone out there obviously has to know this person, whether it's a friend, family member. Somebody knows her.
Coroner Johnson, I want to thank you so much for joining me on In Depth, and hopefully we can reach out to you again for an update, hopefully with great news.
Absolutely. I'd love to keep you posted along the way.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And we'll see you again soon.
You got it.
That was my interview with Coroner Brandon Johnson of the Grundy County, Illinois Coroner's Office out of Grundy County, Illinois. Now, some new information we are basically learning just out of this interview is that the DNA Doe Project is definitely involved. It's now just a matter of getting, from what it sounds like, getting a court order to be able to go through with getting the Grundy County Jane Doe's DNA uploaded to DNA Doe Project. So I want to once again thank Coroner Brandon Johnson for agreeing to do this interview with me. And as you guys saw, I invited him to come back with more updates should he feel the need to update the community and the rest of the nation who have been following closely on this case. And we're going to take it from there. With that being said, I want to thank everybody for listening to this episode of In Depth. And we will come back with another episode soon. We'll keep you updated on who our next guest is on our Facebook page. That's www.facebook.com/truecoldcase. Also, we have an updated YouTube link. So you can go to youtube.com/JasonFutchTrueColdCase. And you will be able to easily get into our channel for True Cold Case File episodes and also in-depth episodes. Make sure to bookmark the channel so that way you're not missing any new videos. Follow and subscribe to the channel so that way you're staying up to date on our new episodes. And we'll go from there. So thank you once again for tuning in, and we will see you on the next episode of In Depth.